Welcome to Obesity, a Disease, the official Obesity Medicine Association podcast exploring the many facets of the disease of obesity. I'm Mark Labriola, and in this episode, obesity medicine specialist and OMA clinical education director, Dr. Nicholas Pennings, interviews Dr. Shelby Sullivan, a speaker from Overcoming Obesity 2019, about the newest endoscopic bariatric procedures. Obesity, a Disease podcast is brought to you by the Obesity Medicine Association, the clinical leader in obesity medicine.
Hello, this is Dr. Nick Pennings, and we're doing a podcast for the Obesity Medicine Association. We are at the Obesity Conference, Overcoming Obesity 2019, and I'm here with Dr. Shelby Sullivan, MD. Dr. Sullivan developed the first endoscopic bariatric therapy program at Washington University School of Medicine and was recruited to the University of Colorado School of Medicine to establish the gastroenterology, metabolic, and bariatric program, where she currently serves as director. She served as the current chair of the board of the Association for Bariatric Endoscopy and is counselor for the Obesity, Metabolism, and Nutrition section of the AGA Institute, and is a recent past chair of bariatric surgery section for the Obesity Society. So welcome today.
Thank you.
So we're going to talk a little bit about your specialty and endoscopic bariatric procedures, and that's an exciting frontier in obesity medicine. So just give us a little idea about what procedures are available now, who's performing them, and how effective they are.
So we have a number of procedures that are currently being used in the U.S. There are three balloons that are approved by the FDA, but only two are commercially available. That's the Orbera balloon, which is a fluid-filled balloon, and the Obalon balloon system, which is a gas-filled balloon, and three balloons are placed over time. There's also the Aspire Assist system, which is like a feeding tube, but instead of putting food in, we take food out, and we can talk about that a little bit more in a couple minutes. And then we also have the suturing devices. So we have a device, the Apollo Overstitch device, which is a suturing device. It doesn't have specific indication or FDA-labeled indication for obesity procedures. It has an indication for tissue apposition in the GI tract, and we use that for a couple of different procedures. One is endoscopic sleeve gastroplasty, which is a procedure where we turn the stomach into a tube-like structure, kind of like sleeve gastrectomy, except we're not removing any of the stomach. And then we also do revision of gastric bypass with that as well. There is another device, the ReShape intragastric balloon, which is FDA approved. It's no longer commercially available, not because of any complications or anything like that, just because of the company is no longer marketing it. And there is the transpyloric shuttle by Baranova, which is a recently approved FDA device. It is not yet on the market. It just hasn't been commercialized yet, but recently got approval.
Okay, so a lot of interesting products and some in the pipeline, and expect even more as time goes on.
Yes, we expect significantly more. So when we think about the endoscopic bariatric therapies, we really kind of put them into two categories. We put them into the gastric devices and procedures and the small bowel devices and procedures. We currently only have gastric procedures and devices that are approved by the FDA and used in the U.S. And in by and large, those procedures, while they may have some effect on gut hormones, they have effect on metabolic outcomes that are because of weight loss. So there's no weight loss independent effects. Now, the small bowel therapies are still in investigational stages. We've got the bypass liners. There's an incisionless magnet system that creates an anastomosis in the jejunum. And then we also have duodenal mucosal resurfacing. These devices and procedures are mimicking parts of the Roux-en-Y gastric bypass, essentially. You're bypassing part of the bowel, or in duodenal mucosal resurfacing, you're essentially destroying the top layer of mucosa so normal mucosa grows back. These devices and procedures don't necessarily have a lot of weight loss. Some of them do, some of them don't. For example, in the first-in-man study with duodenal mucosal resurfacing, those patients had less than 3 kilogram weight loss, but had significant reductions in hemoglobin A1C. So we think that these small bowel devices have both weight loss dependent and weight loss independent effects on metabolic outcomes.
Okay, so some of these effects are restrictive effects, some are malabsorptive effects, and some are metabolic effects. Is that accurate in
kind of
describing
so them? There's no real malabsorption. It's more dyssynergy in absorption. So I would say that there, with the exception of Aspire, the Aspire Assist system, where we are removing a portion of gastric contents after a meal, that the other procedures, while they deliver nutrients to more distant parts of the small bowel, by and large, most of those nutrients are probably being absorbed, although there haven't been specific studies to look at how much of those nutrients may be going to waste in the stool, if that makes sense. But certainly there are effects in the GI tract. The GI tract is really designed to try to make sure that your food is being digested and that you have very minimal macronutrients that are being delivered to the colon. Because there, if that happens, you're going to have diarrhea because of the bacteria that are living in your colon. So essentially, if you have, we know of this thing called the ileal break, and that is when nutrients reach the distal parts of the small bowel, there is a reaction that causes increases in gut hormones to really slow down the rate of gastric emptying and also to induce satiety. And so by using these other devices and procedures where we're delivering nutrients farther down into the small intestine, we think that we may be triggering some of that, and that that's one of the mechanisms by which we are improving metabolic outcomes, but also causing some weight loss.
Okay. So along those lines, what is the impact of endoscopic bariatric procedures on the gut microbiome? Do we have any studies that have looked at that, or are there any interventions that are tailored towards that?
So that's a great question. And at this point, no. There's, as far as I know, there's no published data. No, there may be something that I've missed, but there certainly is no widely reported or widely known investigations on gut microbiome with these procedures. And I think that we're, even with gastric bypass, we're in our infancy and really understanding what happens to the gut microbiome with changes, rearrangements to the GI tract. So we're pretty far away from that with these endoscopic procedures as well. But it's definitely something that I think people are probably looking into.
Okay. Has there been any research on combining anti-obesity medications with endoscopic bariatric procedures?
Yes. So I had a slide in my talk from a study that was published, I believe, in 2012 that looked at sibutramine, which is no longer on the market, and the Orbera balloon. At that time, the balloon was actually called the Bib balloon. What that evaluation showed was that they were comparing weight loss medication by itself versus balloon by itself versus balloon followed by weight loss medication when the balloon came out. They found that the lowest amount of weight loss was with sibutramine alone. Then the next amount of weight loss was with the balloon by itself. But the highest amount of weight loss that was seen was with the balloon followed by the weight loss medication. And in fact, 75% of patients had more than 10% total body weight loss at 12 months, so 6 months after the balloon came out, when they had the device followed by medications. There are some other abstracts that have been presented at meetings. That data, I don't believe, has been published yet, but it does look like there are beneficial effects, synergistic effects of having both devices and medications being used together. Anecdotally, in my own practice, I routinely use both devices and weight loss medications in order to treat patients, in particular with the balloons where that device is actually coming out, to both prolong the weight loss that they have. And in many cases, we get some additional weight loss after the balloon comes out.
Are there particular challenges with weight regain after a balloon is removed?
So there is data on this as well. There is a study that's out of Europe, I believe from Italy, that looked at 5 years of data after balloon. That was specifically, again, with the Orbera balloon. The data showed that weight loss maintenance is very good out to 1 year, so 6 months after the balloon comes out. If you don't do anything else, so no continued lifestyle therapy, no weight loss medications, about 50% are maintaining that weight loss at 2 years. If you go out to 5 years, it was 23% of patients that were maintaining that weight loss. So kind of the important things to take away from that is that there's still some weight loss maintenance in patients, even out to 5 years. But more importantly, we probably need to do additional things to be able to maintain that weight loss. The other thing that's that has been looked at is repeated balloon therapy. And again, that comes out of Europe, looking at replacement of a balloon after there's a certain amount of weight regain. That was also about a 5-year study showing that I believe it was a little over 2 balloons per patient being used to maintain weight loss over that 5-year period.
Okay, very interesting. So where do you see bariatric endoscopic procedures positioned in the continuum of care for the patient with obesity?
I think that they are, when I think of these therapies, I always think of it as kind of a food guide pyramid sort of, with the lifestyle therapy as the basis of that. So I think lifestyle therapy should be given to every patient. Endoscopic bariatric therapies help patients achieve lifestyle therapy changes. They make it easier for you to achieve those lifestyle therapy changes. With the balloons, for example, they're helping make you feel full during a meal, so you're eating less. With aspiration therapy, they're forcing you into some behavior changes when you're eating so that food is actually able to be aspirated. You have to chew your food like you've never chewed before. But it's also removing calories after those calories have already given their full signals or allowed the stomach to signal that food is already in the stomach. With the bypass liners and things like that, they're also having an effect likely on gut hormones, fullness signals, those satiating gut hormones. So I think that they make it much easier for patients to make those lifestyle changes in order to lose weight long term. I think that in many cases, we should think about them in patients who either don't qualify for bariatric surgery or who don't want bariatric surgery, but may be in a BMI of 30 and above. And on top of that, I think we should always think about them in combination with weight loss medications. I think we're going to be seeing more data coming out that really demonstrates the beneficial effect of combining these therapies in order to get the most weight loss that we can in patients with the least amount of risk associated with it. When we think about, especially patients who are in the BMI of 35 and above with comorbidities or 40 and above with comorbidities, we're really only effectively treating a couple percent of those patients per year with bariatric surgery and weight loss medications. And I think that endoscopic bariatric therapies can significantly increase the number of patients that we're effectively treating.
Yes, it sounds like it's a great opportunity to expand the number of services and the opportunity to reach people who need help, who are not getting surgery, maybe are not getting the access to anti-obesity medications like they should have. Well, thank you very much for being here today. It was very interesting to talk to you about endoscopic bariatric procedures and look forward to see what comes in the future.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, Dr. Pennings and Sullivan. For more information about Obesity Medicine podcasts and other resources from the clinical leader in obesity medicine, please visit obesitymedicine.org/podcasts. Love this episode of Obesity, a Disease? Head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. The views expressed in this podcast episode are those of the show host and do not necessarily represent the opinions, beliefs, or policies of the Obesity Medicine Association or its members. Please check back soon for another episode of Obesity, a Disease.